Good evening. I just wanted to welcome everybody and thank everybody for coming and giving up part of their Monday night and try and find out a little more facts. So the purpose of tonight is a presentation on what the impacts would be on CBJ's budget if the governor's budget passed right now. So that's what we're trying to do tonight. After their presentation, there'll be times for question and answers, and we'll move everybody around and we make sure someone's talking on the mic. But basically, that's what we're doing tonight is Mr. Watt is going to do a presentation, and then if you guys have questions or about it, we'll bring you up and try to answer those questions. So it's not really to take testimony tonight. We hope you save that for tomorrow night with the state delegation. So. But Mr. Watt will talk to you about that a little bit. So with that being said, thank you again for coming, and I'll give it to Mr. Watt.
Thank you, Mayor Weldon. This is a big time for Alaska, and in the press release we put out, I put a quote in there that seems exaggerated, but I think it isn't. And I'm going to read it. And it is, never in the last 40 years has a governor proposed such a radical change to state institutions. Not only are big changes proposed, but detail and reasoning on the impacts is scarce to non-existent. Tonight, I hope to walk you through the impacts to the municipal budget and also to the municipality, take questions, and our goal, like the mayor said, is to get good information out. And I'll be blunt, I don't think public testimony to the assembly is what's needed. It's the legislature. The assembly, after a lot of consideration, passed a resolution last Monday. It's a good resolution. It's detailed and shows their concern and dismay for the approach. And so I think it's a source document. I think it's very helpful. In the back of the room, I've got a list of the legislature as it is organized today, and quite frankly, the legislature and the governor are the ones who need to hear from you, and it is legislators, quite frankly, around the state that need to hear. I think Juneau and Northern Southeast delegation understands state government, understands the provision of services that we support and enjoy and find critical to our way of being and our economic and cultural status here in Southeast Alaska. So what does it mean? The governor's budget proposal has a number of direct impacts to CBJ. And I've got them listed here on the board. Hopefully we've got good listenership in the community tonight. So the first, school bond debt reimbursement in this fiscal year, $7.1 million. So what is school bond debt? What that is a long-running state program whereby municipalities can go to their voters and say, good news, we're going to renovate a school facility. And our school facility is eligible for state reimbursement. And historically, it's been 70% of the cost. And if you, the voters, check the box, yes, no, we'll go purchase bonds, renovate that school facility. And then year by year, subject to appropriation by the legislature, the state will pay 70% of the cost of those facilities. So those are all of our Juneau school facilities, everything from Thunder Mountain High School to a renovated Auk Bay School to Harborview Elementary to Gastineau Elementary. It's been a very successful program statewide, and it's encouraged communities to invest in their school facilities. We, fortunately, compared to some other communities, are on the better side of our debt profile. So if the governor's budget went through as it is today, we would lose $7.1 million this fiscal year, which is a large dollar amount. I don't want to trivialize that, but I will give you one example. to think about. So if this goes through, we lose $7.1 million this year. If the program is completely eliminated, that runs Juno's increased debt to $25 million, which is a lot of money for a community of this size. The Mat-Su borough, bigger borough, more population, their debt in this year, if they lose it, about $20 million. But they have built a number of newer facilities. They've had a lot of community growth, built newer facilities. They pushed their debt a little further into the future. Their total exposure from the elimination of this program would be $200 million. So that's something I'm going to talk about tonight is the impacts to Juneau of these proposed cuts. It's not just Juneau. It's all communities in Alaska. But the cuts hit the communities differently. And so this one, this is a big deal, $7 million this year or $25 million over the life of the program. Just for context, our general government services, around $100 million budget. So this is around 7% of our budget, and half of our budget is property tax. So if we were to absorb this, my choices are propose raising your property taxes 14%, burn through savings, eliminate other programs. So that's just this one, and that's a big issue. The next on the list is fish tax. So Juneau does have a piece of our economy from fishing, and we receive tax that is collected by the state that's remitted to the communities. $400,000 is a significant amount of money. We allocate it. We try to allocate it to our docks and harbors programs to support our harbors and our harbor system. Other communities with more dependence and on fishing industry and more business, think in Southeast Petersburg and Sitka. Think up north, some of our friends out Dutch Harbor in Unalaska. This is a big deal to have fish tax cut for the community, and for Juneau, it's another bite. It's another hit. K-12 education. Our school system is one of the most supported, if not the most supported, municipal program that we have. Under the governor's proposed budget, our schools would lose $10 million in funding from the state, which is a lot of money. The school district budget is about $83 million. So doing the math, that $10 million is 13-14%. You can imagine just converting FTEs, full-time equivalents, into $10 million. If you're using about $100,000 for an FTE, that's about 100 employees. That means substantially reduced numbers of teachers, substantially reduced programs, substantially reduced maintenance. That means administration cut to the point where it's not able to supervise and guide and think about the kids' educational needs of the future. That means that a school district who's trying to provide education to get kids ready for a dynamic and changing economy that already is just trying to keep pace with inflation is not going to be able to evolve to meet those kids' needs into the future. That $10 million is a big cut. I'm going to pull out my Alaska Constitution because I think it's important to think about, okay, well, why do we do it this way? Why are we relying on the state for school funding? When Alaska was founded as a state, the drafters of the Constitution recognized that this was a special place and that different parts of the state had different needs. And so they determined that education was a state duty. So the Constitution of the State of Alaska, Article 7, the legislature shall, by general law, establish and maintain a system of public schools open to all children of the state. So education is a state duty in Alaska, which is a little unusual, and the system that the legislature has created over time has the organized boroughs, like Juneau, contribute a minimum level of property tax equivalent to 2.65 mils of our property tax towards education. And there's a band, and it's referred to as the cap. Juno typically, in my experience, has always funded to the cap or right at the cap, or maybe some nuance that makes it not the cap. But Juno funds to the cap, and our funding to the cap means that we put about 5.4 mils of your property tax towards the school district. The property tax that goes operationally, we're at 9.26. So it's a huge portion of your property taxes that goes towards school funding. And that system that the legislature has provided for over time, as required by the Constitution, has that local support portion, but also has a state portion. So in the unorganized borough, which is the portions of the state that does not have a home rule municipality or an organized city, the state provides education in those rural bush communities. In the organized ones, we have this kind of matching program, if you will, state and local funds, and a matching program for school facilities. And Juneau, like all of the organized boroughs, has participated for years and years, and this $10 million proposed reduction in K-12 is a significant part of the school district's budget. Unfortunately, it's actually a little worse than that. Because of federal equity standards, you can't have districts in the state operating at radically disparate levels. And so if the state reduces their portion of contribution to schools, then Juneau's portion that we are legally allowed to contribute would also be reduced to another $3 million. So a reduction in $10 million by the state means a reduction to the school district of $13 million. It would be $3 million less of property tax that the assembly could provide, but I think that's a tax savings that nobody wants. So we've got this structural issue with schools where if the state is not picking up its share, then it further negatively impacts the local contribution. Moreover, the governor has proposed to eliminate $30 million statewide from last year. And so here we are in March, and the local portion of $1 million in March, we've spent that money. The school district has spent that money. You really can't unspool that at this point in time. You know, if you're just counting months of education, you know, we've got 2.5 months left, so we have maybe a quarter left. So if the school district tried to figure out how to anticipate that, they would have to cut four times that amount today, and that would be dramatic in and of itself.
Let me jump in there quickly. Class size has always been really important to our Juneau citizens, and with 100 FTEs, a lot of that's going to be teachers, and so it's going to significantly increase class sizes. So that should be something else that you're aware of, just more of an indirect impact. So,
The university, huge budget cut proposed for the university, 41% of state general fund. I've seen the university president say, well, that would be the budget of University of Alaska Anchorage and University of Alaska Southeast budgets combined. That seems unrealistic that could occur in this kind of timeline. The economic effects to Juneau would be great. Obviously, the university is a big employer. Obviously, there's a lot of economic activity. The cultural effects would be great. The cooperation between the university and our school district would be eliminated. There are many effects of reduction in university funding that we frankly have no idea what that means. We really don't. Early childhood funding, elimination of those state programs, that appears to be going completely in the wrong directions from our municipal thinking. The assembly has been trying to figure out how to help the school district on early education funding. The assembly has been interested in the issue of child care, trying to figure out what we can or should do as a municipality. Ms. Treem.
Rory, can you tell us what those programs are?
I don't know what those programs are, but I'm betting the president of the school board does. And since he's nodding, and we would need him to speak into a microphone if he would like to tell us exactly.
Mr. Holtz, would you come up, please?
Thank you, Mr. Treem. Brian Holst. So these programs here are the state-funded programs. So this is child care support. These are also the state match to federal funds for programs like Head Start. So Head Start federal funds would flow, but there's significant state contributions that follow them. It would be, there's no funding in the proposal for any of those programs. So, there's THREAD, which is a program that provides support and training to child care operators. Those would also be eliminated. So direct supports to operators, direct supports to the Head Start program, and direct support to families with income needs would all go.
Can I ask Brian something while you're here? Is there a required match for federal Head Start, or would those funds still come, or would those be eliminated as well?
I don't know the answer. I asked that question earlier today. I don't have an answer back.
Okay,
thank you.
Further, I think you've seen in the news that the ferry system has been proposed to receive a 75% cut. And even the governor's staff has acknowledged that there is no viable system with a 75% cut. And the staff at Marine Highways and DOT has indicated that they would shut down the system on October 1st. I cannot even begin to imagine what shutting down the ferry system does for the cost of shipping goods for the viability of Bush communities for the region and all of Coast Alaska. I cannot imagine what it would be like to not have a statewide coastal transportation system in the state that has more coastline, I think, than the rest of the country. It is a shocking proposal, to say the least. With regard to the ferry system, there has been follow-up information that the state is planning to do some type of expedited privatization plan. I think most of you are aware that the ferry system has been studied many times, and an expedited plan likely will be a harvesting of already existing studies. I think we acknowledge that public transportation system, it does not pay for itself, and that, in fact, is not the point of that transportation system. Maybe an analogy is our Capital Transit bus system. It does not pay for itself. We cannot privatize the bus system any more than you can privatize the ferry system. There may be small pieces of the ferry system that present a better bottom line, but the point of the ferry system is regional transportation, regional economic development, regional cultural exchanges between our kids and our communities. And I think the ferry system would be the glue that holds many communities together, absent the road system, which is not available to island communities or communities that don't have roads in and out of them. So we will see on the ferry system. I would also say that there are significant hurdles with regard to federal funding if the state does indeed propose to eliminate the ferry system. Substantial federal money has been spent on the ferry system, and if that federal money isn't going to continue to be used to the ferry system, there are payback provisions that are challenging and complicated. So we do not see a viable plan on how to consider those changes to the ferry system. And the last direct one would be to our hospital, so Bartlett Regional Hospital, a similar budget to the municipality, about $100 million. A reduction in Medicaid funding would result in about $6.2 million less to Bartlett Hospital based on the level of service that they provide today. Hospitals can't turn away people in need. So if these healthcare programs go away, to a large degree, it is very likely that people will show up at the emergency room in need of those services. They will not be turned away. The hospital will provide services in a more expensive manner. And then the cost of those services will be lost from the hospital's bottom line and have to be reflected in rates on other part of their system, which will dissuade people from using the hospital because their rates will be less competitive. So very, very problematic. Big picture in reduced funding on Medicaid. I think the number is reduction. I don't have the number off the top of my hand, but the state portion leverages a significant amount of federal funding. And if I've got it right, I think it's $270 million of state funding leverages about $450 million of federal funding. So a dollar or so leveraging $2 of federal funding, removing a crisis from our emergency rooms seems like a good deal. And a lot of work has to happen on that. So these are the direct numbers, and they're very significant. In this fiscal year. And of course, we don't know what would happen in other fiscal years. And of course, we don't know about other indirect impacts. We have tried really hard to be judicious in our response to the budget because we simultaneously want to tell people in Juneau and in Alaska, you have to keep moving forward. Our businesses have to stay viable. Our schools have to stay viable. The municipality has to keep providing services. You cannot freeze. You cannot stop and sit on your wallets. We need to keep moving, and we need to anticipate that the legislature will not pass a budget like this. However, I don't want to dampen your fear of this budget, because this is very real. And even though these numbers are huge, they could make lesser cuts seem better. So, for example, instead of the school district losing $13 million, if that cut was reduced to $2, $3, $5 million, that would seem better. However, $2, $3, $5 million to the school district would be very, very significant and would be very painful. I think if our school superintendent or school president were to articulate how they feel about Juneau schools, it would be very proud that they're unable to provide all the educational services that they wish to be able to provide to meet all the needs and goals of our school kids. So it is a very balanced message of don't panic, but engage. And it's challenging when even the lieutenant governor is quoted on the front page of our paper saying, calm down, everybody. Calm down. We need people like the lieutenant governor to deliver on that message that there is reason for us to calm down. The bond rating companies have analyzed the budget. And the proposed changes in property tax laws would have really negative impacts on local municipalities' credit throughout the state. So this is a little bit of a reference to North Slope Borough, Kenai, Valdez. So the governor's proposed reduction in their ability to charge property tax on oil and gas infrastructure essentially would eliminate the North Slope Borough's budget. It would blow a big hole in Kenai's budget. It would crush Valdez's budget. And those communities have debt, and they have debt through the Alaska Bond Bank, and they wouldn't be able to pay debt back to the bond bank, and there would be credit worthiness problems for other Alaska communities and the state. And Juneau should feel threatened, as all organized boroughs should feel threatened about the proposed impingement of the state on property tax. There are taxation measures that have been given to the boroughs and the cities, and we use those here in Juneau to manage our business. We charge sales tax and we charge property tax. And if the state legislature or governor feels like they need revenue, then I think our advice would be do not look to the measures that the municipalities use effectively and have used effectively since statehood. I have some good news for you, and the good news is that city managers and assemblies prior to myself and our current assembly have been very disciplined in saving money for difficult times. We have something called the Restricted Budget Reserve. We have about $16 million in there. Previously, this has been referred to as the Rainy Day Reserve. We have policy in place that we can use this fund in the event of a precipitous loss in revenue. It's a savings account, and it's a savings account that I think this assembly did not plan on using to solve a budget problem that the state can solve. This is not saved to solve a problem that the state chooses to push on the municipalities. That's not the purpose. This is good fiscal planning by prior borough assemblies in the event of something anticipated, not intentional. Not only do we have the budget reserve, but we have our general government fund balance of $16 million. So 16 and 16 together, $32 million in discretionary funding to smooth out the effects of shock to our municipal budget. At the borough, we at the staff level pride ourselves on our budget culture. We do not spend our allocated department budgets at the end of the fiscal year out of fear that next year's assembly won't fund the departments properly. So this $16 million is the aggregated savings of municipal employees not spending budget authority. And that's a good way to do business. Yeah. That's something. Yeah, thank you. Well, I mean, I think we're proud of that, and we appreciate the public support and confidence. That's a big deal. So we have savings to weather difficult times. The first slide, those numbers could eat these savings up pretty quickly. We worry about the contraction on property and sales tax, and so here we've got the possible effects of a 1% contraction in the economy or a 5% on the municipal budget. So pretty simply, half of our municipal budget is property tax, half is sales tax, about $50 million each. If we had a 1% contraction in values and spending, that's a 1% of our budget. So it's pretty easy math in Juneau. If we had a 5% contraction, you just scale it up to about $5 million. So generally, fairly simple budget. So we are susceptible to both reductions in state aid and swings in the economy, which could happen pretty quickly if the legislature and governor don't solve the situation that we are in soon. I want you to reconcile a couple ideas. So one is the idea that there is a $1.6 billion deficit, and I want you to reconcile that with the proposal that there is $1.9 billion proposed for permanent fund checks. So I will tell you tonight that this is not a budget crisis. This is a priority crisis. I have seen legislators from around the state use those exact same words from both political parties. It is not a budget crisis. It is a priority crisis. It is a question of how the state can best allocate the funds it has and whether or not to provide new revenue to maintain all the things that everybody wants to do. You've seen the dramatic cuts to education, the university, the ferry system, the municipalities. And lost in the shuffle is the budget this year, as proposed, is only 2% lower than last year's budget. It is near flat funding from a high level, what has been proposed this year. It is just that the prioritization of that funding is radically different. So those two ideas, I'm going to say them again. Do we have a $1.6 billion deficit when we are proposing $1.9 billion to go to permanent fund checks? And do we have a budget crisis when we are essentially looking at a proposed budget that is flat from last year? Legislative Finance Director has given us more facts. So permanent fund checks, 37% of revenue. That is a huge portion of the issue. Like I said, fiscal year 22% lower. And the $1.6 billion includes $520 million of cost shifts to local governments. That is not budget cutting. That is cost shifting. That doesn't solve anything at all. And so I give you the question, rhetorical, of course. Is it right to balance state budget on hard work of local governments?
No.
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's much disagreement on that in this room. The governor, in his approach to your traditional budget balancing tools, really not that complicated. You add revenue, you spend from reserves, or you reduce your expenditures. Not that complicated. But the governor has proposed taking two of these off the table along with his budget plan. Whether the legislature goes along with that, I think, is a very important question. And I think those two assumptions can and should be challenged. This is a graph courtesy of Legislative Affairs Finance Director David Teal. And it is a comparison of the fiscal year 19 budget with the governor's amended fiscal year 20 budget. And for those of you listening, it's a bar graph. And it shows last year to this year of all the programs. And it shows proportionally the size of those dollar cuts, or in one case, dramatic increase. It shows the 25% cut to K-12. It shows the 41% cut to the university. It shows the Department of Transportation, if I can find it on here, a cut of 32%, which essentially is the ferry system. And it shows a 90% increase in the money allocated proposed for permanent fund dividend checks. And what is immediately obvious is the relative scale of those cuts to the increase. So I've cartooned this up in case anybody is not getting the point very clearly. And I'm glad we can joke, because I think, you know, humor helps. And we are trying to figure out what the best advice is. But for those of you listening, I've circled the 90% increase to permanent fund dividends with the circle and arrow saying, look here. And I've circled the cuts to K-12, Medicaid, university, DOT, capital spending, and I've said, compare. And you can see the proportional size that those permanent fund dividend checks are larger than those other small program cuts that we find so severe. So if there's one message to help you explain the issue that we're in, this is it. This is the cartoon that I think paints the picture. And you can look at this, and I look out at ferry system employee, and I can look at that small cut for the Department of Transportation, and I can find that small cut in that permanent fund check bar graph, and I can look at the school district, the school board president, and I can find the K-12 funding in that bar graph. And this is what we're talking about. And this is the message that I think needs to get out. Your permanent fund checks, just a graph of them over the years, they've generally ping-ponged around slightly over 1,000. We had some high years, $1,600. So the big question What are they going to be this year? What are the permanent fund checks going to be? And how does the money that goes to permanent fund checks compete with other programs? $150 for a permanent fund check statewide is about $100 million in unrestricted general fund expenditure. That's the calculus. That's the brutal math. Areas of agreement. No free lunch. We have to pay for the services that we want. We're lucky in Alaska. We don't pay a statewide income tax. It's certainly been in the news. I'm not advocating for one. There are many opinions on it, but I want to point out something that's very healthy that happens here in City Hall. What happens in City Hall is people come and they say, I don't like the way you're spending my property tax, and I'm writing a check to you every year, and I'm here to hold you accountable. And there's a very positive relationship that happens between staff and the assembly as a result of that taxation and that push-pull of how much is acceptable and is it being spent wisely. The same thing happens when our businesses come in with their sales tax. It's a healthy relationship. And so in Alaska, statewide, we want the ferry system. We want the university. We want the permanent fund checks. We want the education funding. And we are accustomed, and I would say perhaps too accustomed, to expecting all those things. Can't have it all. So the last graph, it's all in balance, and you can't take it with you. And we had some wise people back in the mid-70s that proposed the creation of the permanent fund, and they didn't try to take it with them. They tried to leave it for the future generations. And because of their work and because of the work of many legislatures and governors, we are the proud citizens who own a $60 or $65 billion reserve. And I know every state in the country would like to have that. So we have a tool that the legislature can use to solve our issues. So closing, I don't think we have a budget crisis. I think we have a priority crisis. The people who are going to determine what that priority crisis solution looks like are on the spreadsheet. There are 60 of them in the legislature, the governor, certainly, the governor's staff. These are the people that are going to decide how this looks. I've given reference to our assembly's resolution and the work of our delegation in support of these services. And these are the people that need to hear. And it's not just the Juneau delegation that needs to hear. It's the state. And so I leave you with the last question, again, somewhat rhetorical. What are Alaska's priorities? What kind of state do we want to live in? That's what I have.
Thank you, Mr. Watt. So, and just to make clear, the $1.9 billion for the PFD, that's the $3,000 per person of the PFD. And what that is the statutory formula. If you use the statutory formula for the PFD, that's what it would be. And Governor Dunleavy has said his budget's responding to two main polls, one that said Alaskans wanted a reduction in government, and the other one that said they wanted their full PFD. But one of the things we have to remember is when they made the PFD, a dividend was not part of that initially. It was 4 years later. So that's what we're saying is keep calm. Don't panic. But we want you to engage with your legislatures. And you have to talk to them about your priorities and say, what are your priorities? Do you want this full PFD? And if you get the full PFD, I think Mr. Watt's done a good idea to show what that would mean to Juneau. So with that, I'll move up there, and we'll take anybody that wants to come up for questions. And we're sorry you have to come up, but we need you on the mic so the listeners in the audience can hear you. So I'll get out of the way, and please feel free to come up one at a time. I'm sure you can control yourself, and we will give you 2 minutes. So.
Good
looks like we have a question from Madam Vladishevsky.
I'm just sending in a question from someone who texted me a question. And the question is the state of Alaska reneging on school bond debt legally? If you would explain that, because
okay,
the answer is
so
yes.
School bond debt, are they reneging legally? Legally, no. So the school bond debt is subject to annual appropriation, and when we approved our school projects, there was a line in there that said subject to appropriation. So legally, no. Morally, I'm going to say yes. If the state couldn't afford to pay for the school bond debt, that would be one thing. But choosing not to pay for it is an entirely different issue. And the problem really that I see is that the state needs to take a position that encourages investment, whether that's in the private sector or whether that's public sector in the facilities in our shared system of schools that's available to every child in the state. And so not paying that school debt conveys the message that the state is going to have an uncertain stance, and it's going to discourage investment. So legally, no. Morally, if the state has the funds, and they do, I think that's a different issue.
And Mr. Watson, someone's running up there. Would you explain the difference between our reserve fund balance and our general government balance? There's a little bit of catches on one of them.
Okay, so the reserve fund balance used to be called the rainy day reserve. So when Juneau had a budget crisis in the 80s as a result of the crash in the statewide economy, the idea was developed that we needed a reserve for a rainy day, if that rainy day came. And we had a smallish amount that was slowly built up. Then about, I'm going to say, 5 to 7 years ago, there was a citizens group that participated and came up with goals and guidelines. And Mr. Bartholomew, our finance director, participated as a citizen on that. And they established a goal of $16 million, because that would represent 2 months of operating capital for the municipality. And they established guidelines that the assembly shouldn't use it unless they had a plan to pay it back. And so the idea is that we would always have that reserve, and then they changed the name of the reserve from the rainy day reserve to the restricted budget reserve. And we've lived by that ever since that time. So that's one. And then the other, the general government fund balance, that's the aggregate of unspent money by municipal departments. Because we have a culture of budget discipline at the municipality, we actually use general fund balance as revenue for the following year. Because we know we're not going to run the budget right down to zero every year. We know we're going to leave 1 or 2% or something of that $100 million unspent. And every year there's going to be a little bit of revenue that goes into that bucket. And every year we're going to use a little bit of revenue that comes out. So two $16 million funds, one very flexible, and the other more tightly controlled.
Thank you, Mr. Mott. And in Mr. Watt's presentation, one of the things that he said in there, and I want to make sure that it's clear, is that a lot of this budget is cost shifting to the municipalities, and that's kind of a little bit fuzzy. What does that mean? Who's it going to actually cost? It's going to cost you and me. The municipality doesn't have a machine out back that prints money. Money comes through taxes, it comes through fees, and the municipality, in order to pay what the state wants to thrust on us, would have to raise those costs for you and me.
And for the listeners in the audience, that was Mr. Edwardson. Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Watt, it's been very productive for you to show and describe the rainy day fund or the the budget reserve that we have, the different budget reserves. But my understanding, having participated in the Alaska Municipal League conference a few weeks ago, is that many of these cost shifts and budget cuts, so to speak, are proposed to be permanent, although one legislature can't hold another legislature accountable. So what it looks like to me for the city and borough of Juneau is that we might be able to absorb these in 1 year, but then not in the future. And what I've seen from some of the proposals, for example, to take the property tax revenue from the North Slope funding or from Valdez, that would be permanent, a proposed permanent change as well. Is that correct?
That's correct. So there are different, depending what the legislature does, some of those cuts could be temporal this year or enduring. And I would go further on the vibe from the Municipal League. And I think from the Municipal League, the message is all the municipalities have to hang together and support each other. Because if Southeast and Coast Alaska decamp and we say it's the ferry system that we want to save, and Fairbanks says it's the university, and North Slope and Valdez says it's the property tax, and Unalaska says it's the fish tax, that's not going to make for a cohesive state. So I think that we have to acknowledge that all portions of the state have different economies, have different funding mechanisms, have different needs, and we need to respect those differences in the other home rule boroughs and cities. And we need to support them in ways that are appropriate. I'll give an example on the property tax. So it might be easy to say, well, oil and gas property tax, maybe not top of Juneau's list, and that's North Slope and Valdez, and they can figure it out. Well, we charge property tax, and the two biggest property tax payers in Juneau are Greens Creek and Kensington. And so the idea of the state eliminating a borough's ability to tax infrastructure from resource development, we should find very threatening as well. And we should find common cause with those communities. So I think the governor has given every community a lot to dislike. And I think it's important that we understand and support the problems that are proposed for those other communities, even if they don't strike at home so clearly for us.
Mr. Pugh, you want to come up?
John Pugh, reside at 1011 D Street. Two things. First, I think this is very helpful. What would be even more helpful, though, is hear a lot of questions about which of these are permanent, which are not. There are bills in the legislature for a number of these, and as you said, I mean, one of them they can do. And in a sense, before, we've had governors who have reduced the bond reimbursement. We had legislatures reduce the bond thing. So you wouldn't have to change the law there. But on other ones in here, for example, the fish tax, they actually have to eliminate that law. With the municipality, the taxes that are going there, you'd have to change that law as it presently resides with the property taxes. So it would be helpful for us as citizens to have from CBJ, what are the, if somebody in here is following that, what are the bills, what are the laws that are being changed that impact us? So that would be one thing I would request coming out of the meeting, to line these up according to what we need to do in terms because it's easier to kill bills than anything else. That's the easiest thing to do in the legislature and to get our lobbyists to do as well. So I think we want to know how we can kill those that are there. That's an important thing. If you ask any lobbyists, that's the thing they do most. They don't add things, they kill things. And that's what we possibly as citizens need to learn to do as well. And then the second thing is, I haven't heard anything about taxes. So to me, one of the local government, I agree that we shouldn't put on the local government, but I also agree that we need to need to expand our tax burdens to a lot of people who, in a sense, rent our state and take all their funds outside. Thousands and thousands of people work in the state and pay nothing to work in the state. And I think that we need to start talking about that as municipalities and to say enough is enough. Billions of dollars of income that is earned in the state goes outside and taken directly outside with not one bit of it being taxed, despite them using our resources in terms of our infrastructure and so on. And, I mean, I've got to say it, even here, our tourism industry here, many of the people are not from here. They work here, but they don't pay anything to work here. And I think you have to put that on the table as a local municipality and to start to think about how do we get our state to look at that, that, in fact, a lot of these people, other people need to contribute, not just those of us who live here and work here and plan to stay here and remain here, being the ones to take this tax burden on. And that's what basically the Dunleavy administration has said. Let's tax real Alaskans, basically. Mm-hmm. Let's make them pay. And yet all the other free riders are going to continue to be free riders. So I would just add that here.
Thank you. You can answer it or my. Go ahead.
Madam Mayor, I'll just add in one of the ironies that Mr. Persily, in his capacity as chief of staff to Kenai Mayor Navarre, has a presentation that's been around for a couple years, and he's pointed out that economic development doesn't help the state budget. It just creates more burden on the state. Right. So basically, he uses the concept of a widget manufacturer who comes into, in the example, he uses the Kenai Borough. Widget manufacturer comes in, lots of people, lots of jobs. And what happens structurally is that there's a greater demand for state troopers, and there's a greater demand for health care, and there's a greater demand for school services, but the state not having corporate income tax or not having personal income tax doesn't have a mechanism to provide for those demand and services. So economic development, the punchline is with regards to the state budget, economic development is bad. And that is a brutal irony. So if you haven't seen Mr. Persily's presentation, it's kind of shocking when you look at it and you actually understand that that's the mechanical problem that we face from being so reliant on oil, whether through the permanent fund or the royalties from the slope.
Okay, and I'll just add to that is in our resolution to the legislature, we did suggest we kept it more generic to use either broad-based taxes or the earnings of the permanent fund to come up with a solution. So we did address it, but we did keep it generic, let the legislature figure out which is best for the state. Okay, that was one brave, so who else is brave?
Come on, guys.
Madam Mayor.
Piece of information.
Go ahead, Ms. Hale.
One question that I'd like to try to see if we can answer is the question that Mr. Pugh raised about how to understand which bills carry many of these changes. And I don't know, Mr. Watt, if you have an answer for that beyond doing a lot of legwork and research.
So, Madam Mayor, with the consent of the Assembly, I think we could put together an explainer pretty quickly. Which bills are in play and which are one-time cuts and which are structural changes, and we could post that on our web and get that out to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Watt.
Go ahead, Madam.
I just have a comment about emailing legislators. Our local delegation suggests that you email your local delegation, but also others, and also get your friends to it's also very effective if your friend from Kenai emails the Kenai legislator. But just in case you don't know, it's a convention, senator.firstname.lastname@aklege.gov. And same thing for representative. It's representative.firstname.lastname@aklege.gov. So you can email your local people. Also, they suggest emailing as many legislators as you can. But courtesy says, say you're from Juneau so they know you're from Juneau. But also the chairs of the Finance Committee is Tammy Wilson, Representative Tammy Wilson, and Representative Neil Foster, N-E-A-L Foster, and Senator Bert Stedman and Senator Natasha von Imhoff are the chairs of the Senate Finance Committee. So those are the names that would be good to email about all this budget stuff. Representative Tammy Wilson, Representative Neil Foster, Senator Bert Stedman, and Senator Natasha von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Mayor. Ms. Tree.
And on that note, when it comes to the items that are in the budget and not things that need to be changed with other legislation, the veto override is what will be most important, and that requires 45 members of the legislature. So we have only got three of them here in Juneau, so find another 42 to email about the programs that are most important to you.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Treem. And one of the things that we said in our Keep Calm is keep the discussion or the debate constructive, not finger-pointing. 45 is going to be across party lines, and so you want to keep your conversation civil and constructive and point out the facts. Oh, do we have one back? Oh, Ms. Sale.
Thank you. And since we're giving advice about sending letters, as somebody in both this job and in my past job as a director, somebody who has received many, many hundreds, if not thousands, of letters from members of the public, the more specific you can be and the more personal you are about your given situation and your experience, the more effective it is. So when we get to sort of a chain email that you just add on to, that's much less effective than something that is directly related to your experience and your experience in Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Dale.
My name is Tracy Hansen, and I live here in Juneau. I'm working on my Master's of Public Admin at UAS, and I was going to go to the legislature tomorrow, but I got thinking that with all the interconnection between all the different boroughs, that maybe saying something here tonight would be a good opportunity, because strong legislatures are sometimes a problem. For a year and a half, I have been working on looking at the pros and cons of the multi-state lotteries and the problems that other states have experienced with them, and historically why Alaska hasn't had one. And I think that now would be a good time to bring one to Alaska, and it would be totally without the legislature having any control over it. So it would be run by a totally autonomous lottery board. And it would have be made up of stakeholders, such as made up of the communities and healthcare and education and Alaska Natives and nonprofits and everybody that would ought to have a say in where lottery funds ought to go. And so I figure it's probably going to come down to a ballot initiative. But, and that's 2 minutes.
go ahead and finish it up.
Okay, so that, anyway, that's, I wrote a very short letter to the editor that was in the paper this morning, that I will be posting my capstone once it is complete online, and I just wanted to get the word out, so.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? All right, Mr. Watt, you want to wrap it up?
I just appreciate everybody coming down here and just finding out the information. So we've got big time for Alaska to decide, what are our priorities. And I think in the spirit of the Municipal League, we are in this together. And we need to band together and figure out how to encourage the state to provide the services that are necessary for us to be Alaskans. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. And the governor has proposed radical change absent any credible process for considering that change. And I think it requires ordinary citizens to participate in a way that they probably haven't before.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Watt. So, again, thanks, everybody, for coming. We will stick around for a little bit in case you have questions and you weren't brave enough to hop up there. That's okay. Bob Bartholomew, our finance director, is in the back. You saw Mr. Holst, our superintendent. Oh, and Ms. Hughes-Candies has a question.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Before everyone gets away, in the spirit of talking about getting involved as a citizen and testifying, tomorrow the House Transportation Committee will be taking public testimony about the ferry system, and that's going to be from 1:30 to 3 and from 5:30 to 6. So there's more information about that available online, but I know that's near and dear to a lot of us, so that would be a good opportunity to get involved.
In room 124 of the Capitol Building.
Ms. LaFave?
And you can hear me?
No, you have to go to the mic. You have to go to the mic so the people in the outer world can hear you.
Hello, and building on what Alicia just shared, there's been a second day of testimony made available, and that will be Thursday the 14th, and I believe the time frames are the same, and that's been posted by Louise Stutz. She's looking forward to having you input. Please do so. Thank you.
Thank you.
And have, Madam Mayor, have we mentioned that our delegation is having a town hall meeting tomorrow?
We have not mentioned it today other than alluded to it.
So our delegation is having a town hall meeting tomorrow, is that correct?
Yes.
Greg, at 5 o'clock at the high school.
JD High School.
JD High School.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.